Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Matthew Wells at United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's programme, reluctance over spotlighting the extent of sexual violence perpetrated against men and boys needs to be overcome. And we hear how schools without walls are teaching women key farming skills. But first, women are on the receiving end of violence in today's conflicts and therefore better at prevention and sustaining peace, the ambassador of Colombia to the UN has said. Maria Emma Mejia spoke before the launch of a UN exhibition this month, showcasing how women helped shape the United Nations throughout the years. Along with a coalition of 66 member states, she helped advocate for a woman for the post of Secretary General during this year's selection process. Ambassador Mejia told Rocio Franco she's now pushing for gender parity at the UN.
We try to have parity in the presence of candidates. We achieved it by far. 7 out of 13 were women candidates. And, well, we didn't get a woman SG, but we got a Secretary General that has committed himself to gender parity in his terms.
What are the percentages of representation of women at the UN in higher positions and also representing countries?
Well, we're 37 out of 193, but though the efforts made by Mr. Ban Ki-moon to fulfill and to have the gender issue very much into his priorities, we're still with an enormous gap in undersecretaries and assistant secretaries. Out of out of the 170, we only have 22%, 34 women in the post. So it is not only the responsibility of the House, of the organization, but it's also the responsibility of member states to produce, to present, to believe that women have a good chance or even a better chance.
What do you think is the main challenge to reach that parity and to get maybe in the future a woman as a Secretary General?
I think it's a political demand of societies now. I mean, it's not an option. It's not take it or leave it. No, it has to be prerequisite, I would say. And you saw in the debate of the 13 candidates, male and female candidates for Secretary General, all of them committed. First priority, gender parity. And don't forget that women are the receptors of violence too in our conflicts nowadays. So we're better for sustaining peace, for prevention. So I think it's an obligation. And I'm sure Mr. Guterres and us member states will deliver.
What are some of the remarkable cases that are going to be shown in this exhibition?
The UN archives are a treasure. I mean, you have letters, you have photographs of these women, you know. You have moments in San Francisco, of course, the debate. The first time that the women from UK came in and they said, you are the women delegates. No, we're not women delegates, we're delegates. Only in 72, a woman put her foot into the Security Council, and we will see how we helped shape the organization. Even if we were few, but somehow it helped shape the difference, the four momentums of the organization in the three pillars of the organization.
There's been a lack of recognition in addressing sexual violence against men and boys, according to a gender specialist speaking at UN headquarters. Kelly Modell is director of the Gender Justice Programme at the International Centre for Transitional Justice, a UN partner organisation that specialises in providing redress for human rights abuses in post-conflict areas. She said most male victims are embarrassed to come forward because it's an act that challenges their manhood. Andita Listiarini asked Ms. Modell how serious the problem was for men and boys.
I mean, I think it's hard to know because it is very underreported. So,
is it a global problem?
Yes, I think it has happened in every region of the world that we can see. I don't want to say it's happened in every conflict because I don't think that's necessarily the case. But if you look back to the wars in the former Yugoslavia, you have a situation where there was one detention camp where 80% of the men who were part of that detention camp had been sexually violated. You have numbers in, you know, Peru, under the Khmer Rouge, Libya, Syria. I think, you know, the first reports that UN women were getting and OHCHR were getting in Syria were about sexual violence against males in detention. So there's no, I think that's part of the problem, is because there is so much shame and stigma. There has not, humanitarian aid workers are not trained to identify it, is that we don't have adequate numbers on it. But what we do know is it's surfacing more and more in a lot of the contexts that are ongoing.
So do you think that's the main hindrance to address sexual violence against men and boys, because people are not very aware of it?
Yeah, so I think it's partially people are not aware to look for it. And I think there's a high level of stigma against it because of the construction of gender roles, that men are the ones who perpetrate that type of dominance. They are not the ones who can be victimized by it. But I also think there is then just a lack of recognition and true understanding among those who are establishing transitional justice measures and running them, that this is something that you need to be proactive about investigating and then developing measures that make victims feel comfortable coming forward to provide testimony on or talk about.
Have you met male victims of sexual violence yourself? And what did they tell you?
Yes, I have. I've met some in both Uganda and Tunisia. And I think it's a very difficult thing for them to talk about. I think it's difficult in that there is a lot of internalized shame because of the way it challenges their manhood and how society views them as leaders and protectors. And what is always striking to me is when they talk about it is the impact that it really has on their social identity and their political identity.
Women in South Sudan are learning key farming skills in what have been described as schools without walls, as part of a project set up by the Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO. There are some 600 farming schools in the country which focus on agricultural techniques as well as livelihood and other social issues. Sebit Williams has been speaking to Rose Adede, who is an FAO gender affairs officer in South Sudan.
The Farmer Field School is a school that is called School Without Walls, and we now have like 600 farmer field schools, and mostly they're either mixed or single sex farmer field schools, depending on their enterprise. For instance, the women can go for milk processing with some few men, and the men can go for agriculture or vegetable growing, depending on what they want. And you find that this farmer field school is a school where they learn many things, not only about livelihood, but even about social issues.
Where are these schools introduced?
The schools are introduced in the community. For instance, now we have in Awil, Lumbek, just in the farms. That's why they are called the schools without walls. The women and the men go to the farm, and then they learn about the crops they're cultivating, how to cultivate in a raw way, or how to water your crops. So that's where it happens, normally in the farms. And for the livestock, it happens in the cattle camp where they're learning.
How important are these farmer field school farms?
Yeah, the farmer field schools have been important for women. For instance, it has made them to access some resources like water sources and then land, because they come as a group and we as FAO can dialogue with the authorities, the local authorities, on how they can access this land. And then they're able to cultivate. And we have realized that through the farmer field school, it's an aspect that calls about interdependence and complementarity, where the women can come with the men and dialogue on issues of gender-based violence and how they can improve their livelihoods.
Have you seen any impact in this society or for the women, some tangible impact really that you would like to share with us?
We have seen a particular impact on the women, because they're able to really go out there and have something for themselves. Those who don't have land, they're having land, they can access the land, the community land, and you find that they are now selling their vegetables. They can feed their children, they can send their children to school, and at the end, you find that nutrition is fed, and you find that even there's less wrangles at home. According to our assessments that you have done in all those areas, you find that the men and women are now able to talk issues even that we used not to hear in some of these communities. To us, that openness and the mobility that is allowed for these women, for instance, even going to market, going to those farms, because at some time we would invite their husbands to be part of the farmer's field school too. For instance, in the beginning, the beneficiaries can be women, but at the end, the men can be partly, indirectly brought in the system, so that there's dialogue, there's understanding in the house. Most importantly to us is finding that there's peace at home.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.